Do not ever come back.
The guy took off quickly, though he had to slow and suck his gut in to glide sideways by Barkley, who did not move except to turn his head to stare him down as he went. But once free of the door, he raced down the passageway. Barkley then looked to the girl, and his tone was far more gentle, but still ticked.
I'm sorry you're in this situation. If you need help getting clean, come to the front desk and ask for Clay. If that isn't something you're ready for, fine. But now, I need to ask you to get anything you have here and get gone. I won't call the police on you. But as I told that man, I'm going to be calling the police. So I suggest you leave, do it quickly, and unless you come at some other time for help, please, don't come back. I can't have you doing what you do here. Any of it, he told her.
She nodded and moved to where a bulky black purse sat on the floor in the corner. Barkley moved out of the doorway, eyes to Dillinger.
This one?
He asked, pointing to Station 6. Dillinger nodded. 6 looked that way to see the girl, now out of her robe and dressed in street clothes in the doorway, cradling her purse in her hands.
I heard you, buddy, she said quietly to Barkley, before she skedaddled on scuffed, high-heeled red pumps down the passageway.
Barkley turned to Diesel and Maddox.
Can I ask you boys to help me and my boys get these assholes up to my office?
Absolutely,
Maddox rumbled. He and Dee moved toward the body pile. Barkley turned his attention beyond them. So 6 did, too. There were 2 DMs there, in polos and everything, both who had not yet been on that night, though one of them had been on last night.
You're on duty,
Barkley told him. Not that there was anything to be on duty to do at that present moment. All the players in the play areas had ceased their play and were watching, including some who had gathered around and others who were standing at the windows and open sliding doors of the rooms. But 6 thought this, as well as the DMs being ready to take over, and Dillinger, that black dude, and Stellan there, meant they'd somehow had this takedown planned. Before she and Dee and Maddox had made their move, they'd had this planned and ready to be executed. It was just that 6, Maddox, and Diesel had forced their move. But how? And why was Stellan involved? She looked to her man. He was in his casual wear, linen shirt, sleeves rolled up to under his elbows, hem untucked, faded jeans, a pair of smart but casual brown suede Oxfords on his feet.
Baby, what are you?
She started. He shifted cold eyes to her, and witnessing that look in them, she shut her mouth.
Not now, he said low.
He turned and moved behind the men who were manhandling their human take down the passageway. And she noted both Maddox and Diesel, each with hands curled in the back collars of shirts, looking at her.
Baby?
Diesel mouthed, his brows high, his gaze shifting back and forth between 6 and the in-motion Stellan.
Dee, focus,
Maddox ordered, and Dee did that, shoving a stumbling DM in front of him, following the others down the passageway. 6 watched them go, feeling ice start to invade her veins.
Not now.
She looked high around the room. There weren't many cameras, but a couple of them were roving, as well as remotely movable. She located the one aimed directly into the room she'd been in with the trio. He'd been watching.
Not now.
But why? Why was he there? Why had he been watching? He couldn't possibly think. She shoved her phone in her cleavage, turned her attention to the now empty passageway and hustled down it, through the door, around the dance floor, and to the reception area, where she knew the narrow flight of steps behind the front desk led up to the management office. It was all clear except a receptionist and a bouncer against the wall by the door. She headed to the stairs.
"You can't go up there," the receptionist called.
"Stop me," she replied, not strolling but running up the stairs. At the top, she opened the door and went through. She found herself in a large room filled with bizarre, slouchy furniture that looked like huge, partially molded pillows. It also had a large desk that probably was once stately, but now was chipped and nicked all around the edges, and the four men they'd caught were on their knees on the floor in front of the desk, Barclay behind it, Josh off to the side. Stellan was across the room, standing in front of some windows with a view to the club. He stood next to Dillinger and the black man. Dee and Maddox were off to the side, just in from the door. Stellan spared her barely a glance when she came in, though Dillinger gave her a good long look. The black guy gave her a lips-twitching assessing one, and she noted Coates gave her a scarily apologetic one. She moved to stand with Dee and Maddox.
"Mistress girl, serious as shit, is that your boy?"
Dee asked under his breath when she got there.
"He's my master,"
Six replied, also quietly. Diesel and Maddox's brows shot high, but she looked right into Diesel's eyes.
"I'm a switch," she told him.
Diesel stared. Maddox did too. Then Dee grinned. Maddox did too.
"Obviously, you're fired."
The words took Six's attention back to what was happening at the desk. Barclay was talking to the three DMs.
"The shit in your lockers has been searched, left where it is, but you can consider it confiscated, including the dope. Doesn't matter what you left in them, you're not getting any of it back. Because once you leave, I'm not seeing any of your asses again, and not only because you're imminently going to be arrested."
There was shuffling around on knees, and the heavy air got heavier. That said, they'd found a lot of illegal substances in the lockers.
"Needless to say, you aren't getting your final paychecks," Barclay told them. "Vacation will not be paid out. References will obviously not be given. But if you manage to get your asses clear of this mess and think to fuck with me or Josh, don't. Trust me. As you can see, I have good friends. Now, pull your pockets out."
No one moved. Dillinger and the black dude, which triggered Dee and Maddox, all took a step toward the quartet.
"No," Barclay bellowed.
The DMs emptied their pockets.
"You too,"
Barclay demanded of Beardsley. "Fuck you," Beardsley snapped. Six didn't even catch how he got there. She just saw that suddenly, Dillinger was on Beardsley, bent over him, shoving his cheek viciously to the carpet with a single hand on the back of his neck. Beardsley's labored breaths could be heard, trying to power out.
"Impressive."
With icy calm, Dillinger stated,
"He asked you to empty your pockets."
Moving awkwardly since Dillinger didn't release him, Beardsley complied. Not surprisingly, of the four of him, old Pete had the most dope. After he did as instructed, Dillinger let him go and stepped back. Six took that opportunity to look at Stellan, who was standing with his arms crossed on his chest, studying Pete Beardsley like he was a particularly grotesque specimen pinned to a board. Josh moved forward, ignored the number of little packets of white powder and money clips filled with bills scattering the floor in front of the men, and took up only key rings. The rest of their possessions he left on the floor. Josh twisted off what were probably keys to locks somewhere at the bolt, and once these were freed, he tossed the key rings randomly to the floor at his side. Barclay kept talking.
Josh and I gave you our trust. We needed you to hold that sacred, especially in this house, where the people in it need to understand you, above all others, have their backs. And you sold junk to pollute their bodies at just...
He started losing it, leaning forward.
Sold bodies.
It looked like he had to force himself to lean back, visibly deep-breathed, got his shit tight, and only then carried on.
You disgust me. I can barely fucking look at you. The state of those girls.
He trailed off, deep-breathed again, then went on, focusing on DM-1, the guy who was keeping guard on the rooms.
And you, standing there, standing right outside those rooms, letting them be used. How can you fucking sleep? How can you even look at your own face in the mirror?
The guy opened his mouth to say something, but Barclay wasn't interested.
Josh is right now making a call,
Barclay shared, and he wasn't lying. Josh had moved to a corner and had his phone to his ear.
He's phoning the police,
Barclay continued, setting the room to wired, but he was opening a drawer in the desk, moving casually like he didn't feel the vibe. Using a white handkerchief he had in the drawer, he pulled out a heavily used black notebook and tossed it on the desk. He also pulled out two large money rolls and tossed them to the desk. And last, he pulled out a short stack of 8x10 black and white pictures, and they slid across the desk. The revelation of all this made Beardsley look even less happy. Six couldn't see all of the photos, but what she could see was what she'd already seen the likes of in the pictures on her phone that Tucker took. Snaps of Beardsley out and about in Phoenix being given bills. And there it was. It appeared someone had been on the job, and they had a lot more time for it than her.
My man here,
Barclay said, nodding toward Stellan, Dillinger and the black guy,
is good with facial recognition shit. Those pictures correspond with a lot of footage in Station 6 and 7, Pete. And he's gone the extra mile, matched it all up.
Beardsley and Six looked to the men standing by the windows, and the black dude raised his hand.
That would be me, he said boastfully, having his own merry grin that was quite like Dee's and just as appealing.
By matching, I mean those men who you've met to take money from the last few days to men using your girls the last few nights,
Barclay shared, and got all attention back to him.
We're handing it and all the footage we have of those rooms to the cops when they get here. They're also getting this book, which matches girls to Johns to times to rooms. This money and those pictures. The drugs will be self-explanatory. And from what we've got here, and what we found in those boys' lockers, and what Branch left in your house for the cops to find, with all that, you're not gonna plea out of an intent to distribute this time, asshole. And just so you know, my man here also rigged this room. And all of this is being recorded.
Beardsley's bruised jaw was working, but he didn't speak.
Now, here,
Barclay said, putting his hand in his pocket and pulling something out. He clapped it on the desk in front of him and slid it over with just one finger. When he lifted that finger away, Six saw it was a penny.
And here,
Barclay carried on, sliding some papers that had been on the desk across it, toward Beardsley. He also picked up a pen and put it on top of the papers.
That's your buyout of the club,
Barclay shared. A penny. Nice touch. Six grinned as she heard Dee and Maddox both fail at swallowing back chuckles.
Fuck what you say,
Beardsley sneered.
Sign it, Barkley demanded.
No fucking way,
Beardsley snapped. Barkley slapped a hand on the desk, leaned into it, and shouted,
Sign it, motherfucker.
You gonna have one of your pieces of meat and make me?
Beardsley asked.
No.
Barkley leaned back.
If you don't take that penny and sign those papers, I'm going to sue you for every fucking thing I can get an attorney to sue you for in civil court, for what you've used our club to do. And I've spoken to an attorney, Pete. Josh and I have a variety of grounds for a suit. So you won't just be facing jail time for distribution of narcotics and pandering. In the end, I'll have the damned club anyway, but I'll also have everything else you own. So save yourself at least some hassle, asshole, and sign the goddamned papers.
Beardsley glared at him.
That kind offer is off the table the minute either one of us walk out of this room.
I have all night, Barkley told him,
but you don't.
After a little more glaring, Beardsley moved to get up, but thought twice when Dillinger murmured,
Keep your knees.
He shot a scowl at Dillinger, reached out, grabbed the pen, flipped a page, and signed a line.
Lucky I have a number of witnesses,
Barkley muttered. Beardsley tossed the pen moronically, sending it skidding across the desk to land on the floor opposite. Like it was going to hurt Barkley to remember it was there eventually, and pick it up. The room descended into silence until Barkley asked his ex-partner,
Do you have anything to say?
Just fuck you,
Beardsley spat.
Anything other than that?
Barkley invited.
And fuck Josh,
Beardsley added.
Is that all?
Barkley asked.
Got him.
He jerked his head backward to Maddox, Diesel, and Six.
On assault.
Oh, I'm sorry, didn't I tell you?
Barkley asked.
When I heard what was happening, I hired Maddox and Dee as undercover security. They know you and your boys were under suspicion and were instructed to keep you under their watch and act if needed, with force if necessary. The altercation was also filmed, and you were clearly the aggressor.
Dee was just doing his job.
Six looked to Dee. He was grinning, felt her eyes, turned his to her, and shook his head almost imperceptibly once.
So Barkley was lying. He did it well.
When Beardsley fell silent, Barkley looked to Six.
Miss Marchesa, thank you for participating in this investigation. After the imminent situation is dealt with, we'll settle your fee and reimburse expenses. I'll be in touch.
She decided not to share. She hadn't exactly earned that fee, since someone else did a whole load of the work. Though she and her crew did get their man, in a way. Not to the extent the police were going to have their men, due to what appeared to be Dillinger and his buddy horning in. Instead, she just lifted her chin slightly and said nothing. Josh was back at the desk. Barkley shot him a glance, then moved it through the room.
I think we're done here,
he said. Dillinger and the black guy were settled in and didn't move, so, as Six had guessed, they'd done the legwork and would be talking to the cops. Stellan did move. He did it, sauntering across the office right to the door. Hey, Six called, moving to him. He stopped at the door and looked down at her.
We'll speak at home.
With nothing more, he opened the door and moved through it, leaving her behind. Leaving her behind. Her first thought was to run after him. Her second thought was that if she did, once she caught him, she might do something really stupid. Because it was clear he was pissed, but she was working. Sure, it was in a sex club, but she was working. So why exactly would he be pissed? Act that way. Treat her that way. cold, remote, like he was a frustrated parent dealing with a wayward child.
Not? No. We'll speak at home.
Fuck that. Six looked to Josh, and he scrunched his face at her in apology, telling her he knew in whatever way her man was on board in this situation that her man was on board. But Josh hadn't told her when he should have told her that her man was on board. In other words, before Stellan got pissed at her. She decided not to broach that now or maybe ever. Josh had enough to deal with. She just nodded to him, then hit the door, yanking it open angrily and stomping out. She heard big bodies clomping down behind her, and when she hit the reception area, Maddox caught her elbow. She whirled on him. He held on.
That okay?
He asked, meaning Stellan.
Is everything all right? Molly called, rushing into reception toward them.
It's all cool, Dee told her, stretching an arm out her way, an invitation Molly didn't hesitate to accept, burrowing under it and right into him as he curled it around her shoulders.
Is it?
Maddox asked Six quietly, regaining her attention.
I don't know, she replied. I'll find out when I get home.
Maddox let her go but continued studying her.
Your dude is some serious good-looking, and he's as classed up as you are, when he isn't busting some asshole's face in,
Diesel declared.
But Six, babe, you're the fucking shit. The way you marched up with your phone all good to go. No offense to my Molly here.
He gave her a squeeze.
Or my boy who just pumped a huge load out of me and into me.
He tipped his head to Maddox.
But I got hard watching you do that. And I think I might have even popped a bead of pre-gum at your move with the stiletto. Man's got a woman like you in his bed. Whatever's buzzing him, he'll get over it.
She wasn't sure if he'd have to. It might be her that had to get over it.
Wow, Six, you did all that? Molly asked, her eyes huge.
She was the shit, Maddox mini boomed.
You're right, Dee. It'll be fine, Six stated, hoping it was the truth. Molly looked among the group.
What's going on? She asked.
It's all good, baby. All cool. But the cops are going to be here in a minute, so we might want to head out,
Maddox said, then turned right back to Six.
Walk you to your car.
I'll be fine, she assured.
Walk you to your car,
he repeated firmly. She rolled her eyes, caught Molly grinning like only a woman in a man like Dee's hold, with a man like Maddox also in her life, could do.
Let's go, Six said.
They headed out, hearing sirens. They were halfway across the parking lot when the first cop car came in. Not hot, they knew they had their men. Once parked, they cut the siren immediately. Molly was still in Dee's hold as they walked, and she was looking over her shoulder at the squad.
So it's all over? She asked.
Yep. Apparently Clay was tipped off before Six got in there, because he had all sorts of badasses working it.
Dee shared, curling her closer.
So the bad guys are gonna pay? Molly said.
All on their knees in Clay's office, waiting for the police to arrive, I'd say yeah,
Maddox muttered.
You guys look okay,
she noted as Six stopped them at the back of her Cayenne.
Is everyone okay?
Everyone standing here is. Six's man showed and fucked someone up, and Dee fucked a couple of them up,
Maddox recounted.
But we're good. Mad got some of that action,
Diesel put in.
And I missed it all,
Molly pouted and looked at Six,
including meeting your man.
She hadn't missed anything. Stellan was not in the mood for introductions.
You won't miss what comes next, baby,
Maddox said in his brand of purr, before he turned heated eyes to Dee.
Bro, fresh cum plugged up your ass, balls drained dry. You still lay that motherfucker out.
Diesel's patented grin was out full force,
and aimed at his man.
Brother, you're the one who put in the effort. I just took it. And it didn't seem to me you had any problem taking care of business. Plans have changed, my man.
Maddox informed him.
We get home, don't expect to sleep. After that show, I'm feeling benevolent and pumped. So Big Daddy is getting it how he likes it, and taking his monster all fucking night long.
Yippee, Molly whispered. D turned to Six.
I'm thinking I might have to call off work tomorrow.
No thinking about it, D. Straight up, I'm gonna fuck you till you can't move.
Maddox promised. Can I suck my D while you take his ass, Maddie? Molly requested.
Maddox turned doting eyes to his woman.
Baby, you can latch on in the truck if that trips your trigger.
Right on,
Diesel growled. We should let Six go and get home, Molly said excitedly. Trigger apparently tripped.
The trio turned to Six. Then, before she knew it was going to happen, she had her face stuffed in Maddox's chest with his hand squeezing the back of her neck, feeling his chest rumble even as she heard.
Six, pleasure.
He pulled her away by her neck and looked down at her.
You ever want a show? Let us know. We'll pull you up a chair. You ever want a good meal? Dee can't cook worth crap, but me and Ma got our shit tight in the kitchen. You're welcome at our table. And we'd only invite you for the good stuff.
Well, hey, Six muttered awkwardly. Thanks.
Maddox smiled down at her and let her go. Molly moved right in, giving her a hug, pressing her cheek tight to Six's shoulder, saying,
What Mad said. Totally.
She pulled away but didn't let go, tipping her head back to look up at Six.
You're awesome, and I hope you don't become a stranger.
Six hoped that too, cupped Molly's cheek, and told her so.
I won't, honey.
Molly smiled radiantly and invited,
When you come over, bring your guy.
That would remain to be seen. Six just smiled. When she let go, she was engulfed in a Diesel hug.
He'll be good. You're right,
he whispered in her ear.
It'll be fine. You'd be a fucking fool if he doesn't work whatever's up his ass out and make that so.
He lifted his head but also didn't let go.
Thanks,
she whispered in reply. He tipped his head to the side and teased.
Switch, huh?
She shook her head but forced a smile. He started to let go, but she caught him by fisting her fingers in the sides of his shirt. Dee focused again on her, raising his brows.
Thanks for the show.
He shot her his grin.
For you?
Anytime.
She pressed in at his sides.
It was beautiful, Dee.
He tensed, and his face froze.
He got her.
Beautiful, she repeated. He began to pull away, but she didn't let go.
An honor to watch, Diesel. You're a lucky man. And they're lucky, too.
Know that.
He grunted.
I know you do, she said gently.
Let him go, but he lingered, looking into her eyes. He did this for several long beats.
Beautiful,
he whispered, like that was something he wanted to believe badly, but couldn't.
Unbelievably, she told him the truth.
It sadly didn't take long before he shook it off, jerked up his chin, and moved away. When he did, he avoided Maddox and Molly's eyes.
Molly's followed her D.
Maddox was staring at Six. He lifted his forefinger to his temple, flicked it out to her as a salute, and they all shifted away, moving slowly as an attached group. Molly in between her two men, their arms around her, hers around them, toward a big white truck parked opposite her Cayenne, several cars down, both men glancing back repeatedly. Off duty, inaudible warlord speak for,
Get in your fucking car.
Six moved and got in her car. She started it up, stared at the lights of her dash, took a breath, too. Backed out of her spot,
and noted that the trio's truck was backed out, well out. Out enough to give her room to pull out in front of them, but idling behind her, waiting for her to motor. She saw Maddox behind the wheel. Diesel was in the passenger seat. Molly couldn't be seen. At least that made her smile. She rounded the empty cop cars that now totaled two, stopped at the entrance to the club, looked left, looked right, looked left again, and turned right. Thus, she headed home. 26. For as long as I live. 6. The second six hit the kitchen. She thought it was a good sign that there was a filled, chilled martini glass with three fat olives on a silver pick in it, sitting on the end of the bar. She thought it was a bad sign that only the switches that illuminated spotlighting on Stellan's artwork and the pendants hanging over the bar had been hit, meaning the great room was very dimly lit. However, she could see Stellan standing at one of the French doors, staring at the lights rotating colors in the pool, a glass of scotch in his hand. Her heels had made sounds on the tile, sharing her approach, but he didn't look at her. So she stopped at the end of the bar. She didn't touch the drink. She called. Apparently, you're pissed. That seemed like quite an intense scene you were part of, he noted toward the pool. She knew he was possessive of her. He'd made that clear. But considering the situation, Six still had to hold her anger in check as she returned. As you obviously watched it, you're aware I was only an observer. Very true, he murmured. He said nothing more. She gave him a shot, but he didn't take it. So she remarked, I don't know this particular Stellan. Do you need to brood for a while to get over your bullshit? Or are you expecting me to beg you to share what your problem is so I can beg for forgiveness? I'm not certain you're due. That made him turn his head to her. Be careful, Simone, he warned. Why? She asked immediately. You were involved in a situation that included drug dealers and pimps. I would think that you, of all people, would be aware of the kind of element those activities attract. Your point? She prompted. He turned his body toward her but didn't make a move to her. It's dangerous, he stated. Any one of those men you grappled with tonight could have had guns, knives. They didn't. They could have. And you walked right up to one of them, armed with a phone. Okay, she had to concede that. Though not verbally. How did you know I was there? Branch heard through however Branch hears things that you took that job. He shared it with me. Dillinger did. What? Why did he share it with you? He was concerned about the company you're keeping, and not just Barclay's partner, but in all of your extracurricular activities. He spoke with Leany about what he should do, and he came to me. So Evangeline told him to share his concerns with you? Yes, he confirmed. Six had to take a breath so as not to get sidetracked with additional anger at the sisterhood. Doing what the sisterhood often did in a way that was so integrated in society's mindset, most of the time they did it without noticing they were doing it. Underestimating a sister. Especially when she was engaged in doing something that stereotypically was the purview of a man. If Branch was worried about her as a colleague of sorts, he should have come to her. Being a man and maybe not getting it, if he didn't know the right way to go with that and ask this woman, straight up, Evangeline should have advised him to approach her. Not Stellan. However, at this moment, she could not get bogged down with that. There was enough bogging down the room. It was very unfortunate Stellan carried on.
Branch was aware that I'd already spoken with Carvello, Rodrigo, and their like, and shared with them that you no longer were available to provide services to them. As this job was outside that breed of client, and thus I had not talked to whoever offered it to you, he was concerned you'd put yourself in another dangerous situation, knew I'd already acted to keep you out of such situations, so he came to me. Learning this news, Six stood there, staring at the man she loved, breathing heavily. When Stellan spoke next, his tone was no longer remote, but warm and gentle. You seem to either be in denial of their existence, or have taught yourself to ignore them, or have forced yourself with that exceptionally willful mind of yours to forget them. But I enjoy your body daily, and your gunshot wounds are not lost on me, darling. They're a constant reminder of that life you used to lead, a constant reminder that if you keep leading it, one day you might not come home to me. Okay. Right. Six looked down to her drink, reached out a hand, picked it up, and brought the chilled gin to her lips. She took a sip. She then studied the oil from the olive skimming the surface. She took another sip. And she did all of this, reminding herself she was an adult. She was in a relationship. She'd never been in a relationship, but now she was. So she had to handle this. As an adult. Facts. She was in love with this man. He was in love with her. She wanted a future with him. He wanted a future with her. So she could not lose her mind, say something stupid, or do something stupid. He had valid points. They were bullshit, but perhaps he didn't know that. She had to keep herself together and explain that to him. Calmly. She took one last sip, put the drink down, and looked to him, having to regain her control because he was watching her. But he was still all the way across the damned room, berating his wayward girlfriend. She drew in another breath and wished she hadn't set the drink aside. First, she started softly. You began with me observing Maddox and Diesel's scene. Do you have an issue with that?
I can't imagine how you could ask that,
he replied.
You were in a room with two men having sex without me there.
I was on a job. It's trite to turn the tables, Simone, but it's also effective. To that end, I must ask how you would feel if, unknown to you, I was in a room watching women have sex. Fuck. Another point. It was a job, Stellan. I understand you wish me to get there with you, Simone, but that excuse does not wash. The only reason I'm not infuriated by that particular part of this scenario is that you wore my collar both nights. So, at least you were thinking of me. She worked hard and, fortunately, mostly succeeded in keeping the exasperation out of her. Of course I was thinking of you. I'm always thinking of you. I'm afraid I'm not convinced of that at this present time. It was a... Repeating it doesn't make me understand it. Don't interrupt me, honey, she said quietly. Stellan held her gaze but said no more. As I was going to say, it was a job, a good one, an important one, one I had to take. The situation in question was happening at the Bolt. I went there last night for reconnaissance purposes. I have a paying job, responsibilities to my employer, and this was outside that. I couldn't give all my attention to it, but it was important. And with what was happening in that club, it was pressing. What was happening there could not stand. I recruited informants, but that's never the best scenario when you're gathering information, especially when you need solid evidence. I had to go in. I had utterly no intention of observing any scene, outside perhaps strolling past one. When she paused and he didn't speak,
She was relieved to learn he was the kind of man he had proved himself to be in the past, even if they hadn't exactly had a situation quite like this. In other words, a man who would listen to what she had to say. She carried on. You did not get to meet them before you left, Molly, Diesel, and Maddox. But I've known Molly for some time. She's sweet and friendly and has her head together. I recruited her. Her two doms, Diesel and Maddox, had noticed what was going down and offered to assist. At first, mostly to take my back, because as you could see, they're skilled at that. In the natural course of things, it became clear that going undercover as an observer of one of their scenes would put me in a better position to be at the Bolt for reasons that wouldn't be questioned. Place me there for longer when I was not going to play, and allow me to keep a much closer eye on things. Regrettably, Stellan had something to say to that.
You watched two of their scenes, Simone. You sat and watched the big one work the dark one on all fours on the platform last night, he pointed out.
He'd been there last night. She took up her drink again, staring into it as she calmed herself, before she took another sip. She set it down and noted, So that was why I beat you to the honey last night.
Yes,
he confirmed immediately. You're right, I misspoke. I watched two of their scenes, she said tightly. Last night was supposed to look like a tryout.
It succeeded,
Stellan shared.
And the only reason I wasn't infuriated last night was because you were obviously not moved by their performance. Because you didn't want me to service you at Naya and Ami's scene until their display, witnessed with me, moved you to have that need. For you, what Diesel was doing to Maddox or whichever one is which would normally be quite affecting. Last night, it did not seem to have that effect.
That happens when I'm working, she stressed. And I'll add, when you're not there. He took a sip of his drink, but said nothing. I was not there to get my rocks off, Stellan. I wasn't there to get my mistress on. I would never do either of those without you with me, not ever. I did not participate, I did not touch, I did not command. I used their scene to keep an eye on the stations Beardsley was utilizing, and to get a take on the DMs that were in his pocket. That said, with full disclosure, which I would have told you regardless, because I'd very much like you to meet all three, but also what I learned of them is troubling me, and I'd want to talk it out with you. Molly is incredibly lovely, and there's a deep emotional issue the trio is enduring with Diesel. So I cannot tell you I was not moved when that came out in their scene. Diesel isn't comfortable with one side of his bi nature, and it doesn't often get to where Maddox was able to take him tonight. It was an honor to witness that, even as Molly explained what was happening. So it also felt like watching something tragic. But the bottom line is, Stellan, as important as that is to those three, all of that is an aside to what I was doing there. This is my job. It's what I do. It's what I'm good at. And you have to trust me to do it without intervening. He opened his mouth, but she lifted her head. Please let me finish, she requested. He inclined his head. You may choose not to believe me, she continued, but as I was driving there tonight, I made the decision that if this investigation went further than tonight, I would share it with you and invite you to be a part of it in terms of being with me at the Bolt. Molly, Diesel, and Maddox don't do other doms, but they were impatient for something to be done about the situation, so they might have allowed you to observe as well if it facilitated that. They might not have, and I could have figured something else out. But I was going to give you that choice. Now, as you decide whether or not to believe me, I'll point out, if I had not had you on my mind, if I did not want to have you there with me in the way I could, I would not have worn your collar.
Point taken, Simone,
he said quietly. Good. But they weren't done.
As for Carvalho, Rodrigo, and the rest, you may also choose not to believe me, but I'd also decided, although I'd done it very recently, I still had made the decision that they no longer had a part in my life. It's mostly due to you. I want a future with you, and they don't belong in a life that includes something as beautiful as you. His face began to shift to warm as he started. Simone, but, she said forcefully, cutting him off, it also has to do with me. It's been pointed out to me also very recently that the reasons I did all of that at all no longer factor. I don't need to best my mother. I don't need to survive in that world when she did not. I don't need to inhabit that world at all. So I was going to scrape it off. I'm delighted to hear that, sweetheart. She was glad he was. They still weren't done. What is not okay, Stellan, is having my boyfriend phone around town and warn assholes off me. That's archaic and frankly ridiculous.
I did it at a time when you weren't letting me in, Simone, he explained. You weren't taking care of yourself. You weren't opening up to me, to the people who care about you. Definitely not to yourself.
Stellan, I absolutely understand the impetus. It's still not acceptable. If you had issues, you should have talked to me about them.
Darling, if you'll remember, I tried. That wasn't somewhere you would go. We had a deal, a month for me to try to break through. And I made moves I don't regret to make sure you came home to me every night of that month, and then on, so I could break through, and when I did, have a future with you.
Okay, I get that. But are you getting me? She pushed.
I am,
he replied. So we're understood. This is my work. I can assure you that I'm limiting it to legal activities of a sort. But I think you understand me. But the concerns you have, you need have no more. You can also not intervene.
I love that you would commit so fully to the mission you had these past few days because of what that mission was,
he returned.
For, as I hope you know, I very much agree what was happening at the Bolt was deeply offensive and had to be stopped. That said, I hesitate to inform you of this, my darling, but I feel it's vital that it's said. You are not a superhero.
She stared at him. Stellan kept talking.
You cannot always save the day, the terrified, broken child inside, the junkie prostitutes having their bodies abused, the lonely sub who's looking for a mistress who can meet his needs, who is also a woman with whom he can share his life, the rich, successful, but stupidly stubborn dom who's fallen in love with a remarkable woman that for some reason he will not allow himself to have.
Six couldn't stop staring at him.
You are flesh and blood, he whispered, capable of being harmed and hurt and worse. I love you, Simone. I want a future with you. I want to live my life beside you. I want to make children with you. What I don't want to do is live that life, terrified of losing you.
You won't lose me, she whispered back. She jumped when the scotch glass shattered against the wall. After that, she stepped back in utter shock, witnessing Stellan Lang totally lose his cool.
You walked up to that man armed with a phone.
Damn. There it was. He wasn't pissed. He'd been scared. She'd scared him. He loved his sister. She'd been harmed and hurt and worse, and he'd lost her. She hated that. Hated it. But in this instance, it was vital for him to understand. She was not his sister. I had backup, baby, she said soothingly. You have 2 gunshot wounds, Simone. He walked to the dining room table and slammed his fist into the top of it twice.
2.
God. Her man. He really loved her. I did research on these people, honey,
she said calmingly. I talk to regulars at the club about all the players. I've been there before. I did a thorough walkthrough last night. I spent the scene with Dee and Maddox assessing those DMs.
You are not fucking understanding me.
He bit out. One got his hand on you. I had that situation under control.
He touched you and he was twice your size.
Stellan, honey, I can handle myself. He looked away, dragging his hands through his hair, muttering, Jesus Christ.
Baby, you need to trust. I know how to do my job.
It's my job. You need to trust in me that I can do it, she said. He turned back to her.
In all my life, in truth, to the soul right now, there are two beings who are breathing, only two, Simone, who I love, who it would rip me apart if I lost, but only one that if I lost her, it would fucking destroy me. And that one is you.
I don't have a hero complex, honey.
I read your sketchbooks.
That was for Simone.
You are Simone.
I know. His chest moved with his deep breaths. We needed to have this conversation, she said. It's important we get to the right place here, baby.
And when we have children?
He asked.
Will you do these things when you're a mother?
I think you know Sylvie Creed. He looked to the pool and a muscle jerked up his cheek.
He knew Sylvie. She was a fabulous mother, and she was a kick-ass investigator.
Actually, first we need to get past the when we have children part, she tried to joke. He turned his head and locked eyes on her.
You're having my children, he growled.
Okay, honey. How many do you want? She whispered.
Get over here.
She decided to cross the great divide. Her man was emotional. He'd had a shock that night. Apparently, even Stellan Lang had times he needed to be soothed. So she went there. She nearly stumbled when he yanked her to him the minute she was within reach, slamming her close and holding her closer. Six wrapped her arms tight around her man. She let him hold her, assuring himself she was right there, in his arms, breathing. Okay. Then she set about assuring him of other things. Right here, right now, I promise never to take unnecessary risks. I promise to do my research and always be cautious and prepared. In my work for Joel, it's rare there's danger, but if there is, I promise I won't go in ill-equipped in any way or without backup. There will be no occasion when I will go gung-ho. Above all, I will do everything in my power to come home to you, safe and sound, every night, Stellan, for as long as I live. With every word she spoke, his arm squeezed tighter and tighter, so she was nearly wheezing when he was done. He got what he needed out of that hug because he took the pressure off, but didn't let her go. He rested his cheek on the top of her head and murmured, I shouldn't have called Carvello. No, he shouldn't have. She didn't confirm. She just said, it's done. We're past it.
Or Rodrigo.
She grinned against his chest. Okay, baby. I get it. Stellan held her and she held on. Eventually, quietly, she promised, the stuff I did to get those scars, Stellan, I vow to you. It's done.
All right, darling.
She let out a big breath.
You might want to know. Susan tried to warn me about interfering with your work.
He shared. Six didn't know her well, yet, but she had a feeling Susan was the kind of woman who would have learned about the bolt job and taken her concerns direct to Six. She's pretty awesome, Six muttered.
Yes,
he agreed. It was righteous that Barclay made Beardsley sell his share in the club for a penny, she remarked, tipping her head back. Stellan lifted his to look down into her eyes.
In getting to know him, I've noted that Barclay is righteous in a number of ways. To say he was beside himself about what was happening is an understatement.
Branch had to physically pull him off that Josh character when he admitted he'd suspected something was going on for weeks and he hadn't shared.
But how could he not have known before? Six asked questions she'd had since the beginning. Everyone thinks this Barkley guy is awesome. But in one night, the state of those girls, it was obvious.
Apparently, Barkley has recently met a woman who he's become rather fond of, and they spend quite a bit of time together,
Stellan explained.
Also apparently, Josh has been lax on holding up his end of the partnership, but he respects Barkley and appreciates what he's done for the club, which is Josh's livelihood. So to give Barkley time to be with this woman, and simply to give him a break since it seems he's been running the club mostly single-handedly for years, Josh told Barkley he could take a step back, and Josh would step in. Barkley agreed, continuing to do the books, supervise the bars and stocks of liquor, but gave up night management to Josh so his evenings would be free, and unfortunately handed staff scheduling to Beardsley.
And thus Beardsley took advantage of that change in circumstances, she murmured.
Stellan nodded. Further to that, although it's costly, as a precaution, Barkley keeps security footage backed up for 6 months before he records over it. Branch's colleague assessed it, and it appears the prostitution situation is relatively new, and has only been going on for around 3 months. It did not escape Josh for very long, and he shared he confronted Beardsley about it repeatedly, being rebuffed, getting increasingly panicked about it. This culminated in a nasty public argument that set him to finding an outside source to assist him in proving what he sensed to be true, this giving him the ammunition to go to Barkley so they could handle it effectively. Not an altogether wise strategy, but he was trying to do the right thing.
No, not wise. But at least it ended up getting sorted.
The dealing, however, Stellan continued, through Beardsley and via the DMs who were working that side job, has been going on much longer, right under the noses of Barkley and Josh, who were both unaware until last night.
Why didn't any of the members report anything? She asked, deciding also to ask the trio the same thing, because they knew it was happening and they didn't say anything either. Maybe she'd bring it up when she went over to their place for dinner.
Drugs are rampant everywhere, Simone, Stellan pointed out, and the people dealing them and doing them tend to be careful about other people catching them. But I would say it's more, especially in an environment like that, what people do is their business, and not your own. Reporting decadent behavior, even illegal behavior, isn't exactly a part of our way of life. In this instance, that could be debated, right or wrong, but I can understand why members would simply let it be.
That made sense. He was right, it was debatable, but it made sense.
Stellan carried on. That said, it would seem to me Beardsley was gaining confidence his sideline money-making schemes would continue to fly under radar, considering he'd been able to deal drugs in his establishment for a long time without his partner's knowledge or consent, recruiting others to expand the operation, all without getting caught. However, I suspect it's easier to hide a drug deal than it is a young woman being marked with the Chinese symbols for Darren in one of his club's playrooms.
She felt her eyes get big. Someone marked one of those girls with his name?
Apparently.
How do you know that?
Branch's colleague was able to track down a young woman who worked for Beardsley for a while and decided it wasn't to her taste. She shared about the whole operation, the drugs, the DMs, the clients, the extremes.
Whoa, that guy worked fast. Totally impressive. Is Branch's colleague that black guy there tonight? She asked.
Yes.
Did you meet him?
Are you asking me that because it's clear he's highly skilled, efficient, fast, and effective, and he might be useful to you in some capacity in the future? Or are you asking me that because you wish to invite him to our next dinner party?
She smiled up at him.
Our next dinner party? He's not in the life. So the next party we have, he probably would be uncomfortable.